hello there, friends. My name is JP Cadoran from Time Warner Cable Sports Channel. This is Initial Reaction. If you want, you can put dots in between each of those letters, but that would take too long to say.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting that cordial of a greeting.
Well, hello!
My name is J.R. Radcliffe from Lake Country Publications and now Newspapers.
And you're the tired one today? Is that what's going on?
Yeah, you know, that's how things go.
Were you up all night celebrating that Marquette Lacrosse Big East Championship?
That would have been on Saturday night, and of course I was.
Were you up all both nights?
Of course I was, because when's the last time a Marquette team beat the number one team in the country, JP?
Well, when's the last time the Marquette Lacrosse team won the Big East Championship?
That would be never. JP.
So we're going to talk about that later today. I think we should start with your 13-18 Milwaukee Brewers because they're
when you put it that way,
because they are the 22nd best team in Major League Baseball according to the standings. At least I know if we're going sabermetrics, they're probably like the fifth best.
Is that
right?
Legitimately right that they're the 22nd best record? Do you know that off the top of your head?
Yeah, I looked it up.
Wow.
Well, because the Yankees and Astros and Braves and somebody else are in the bottom four.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
The Braves you knew would be there. The Phillies you figured would be, and here they are with a winning record and an outstanding young pitching staff that makes you wonder if their window is going to open up right away.
I just think it's interesting because, so I believe they're 13-18, maybe 13-19. It hasn't been as bad as I thought it was going to be. You know, like, basically it was the second half of last year and then through the offseason, the Band-Aid was ripped off. You know, it was, okay, this is going to hurt, but this is what we're doing. So we're not in the second year of the rebuild, but we're not in the first year either. Like, we're, you know, the tearing down has already happened. Really, there's not much left to tear down other than maybe Braun and Lucroy. But I feel like they're already on their way back up, or at least they've certainly bottomed out, and it's not really going to get much worse. Am I wrong?
I think actually there is still a floor here, and we talked about this a lot before the season. We didn't think they were going to be that bad, and not as bad as people thought. And I think honestly what we're seeing is exactly that. They're not as bad as people thought. They're certainly better from a wins-loss standpoint
and
than they were last year.
And that's despite their starting rotation being awful.
Horrible.
Like,
worse.
They could be so much better while still, like, not even trying to win.
Right. I think there was possibility that Jonathan Lucroy and Ryan Braun came back as strong as they've ever been. That has come to pass. I think there was a possibility Chris Carter would be a sneaky little off-season pickup that would, you know, yield a bunch of power numbers. That's absolutely come to pass. There are a lot of guys on the team that you thought, well, maybe they could do something, and I think mostly they've done it. Aaron Hill, prior to hitting 3 home runs in a game, was really the only true disappointment on this team from a position player standpoint.
Yeah, like Jonathan Villar has had a good start.
Yep. I think Domingo Santana's been a learning curve, but still doing what you hoped he'd be doing.
So I don't know. I just figured that it just hasn't been as bad as I thought. And certainly, if you talk to all of my Cubs friends, they certainly think that the Brewers are tanking and awful and not even worth watching. And while they certainly do get blown out every now and then, when they win or when they're in a close ball game, it's fun. They actually usually win. You know, that's a thing.
They do have a penchant for rallying, which is nice.
I believe 9 of their 13 wins have been come from behind so far.
And that is cool. Here's the thing that really, really concerns me, and that the starting pitching is terrible.
Really,
we know this, and their bullpen is fine. It's been 25 consecutive games going into Monday that they've allowed at least 4 runs in a game. They haven't, in fact, I don't know if I'm not positive of this. I think they've only allowed 2 runs one time. That was a 2-1 loss to the Giants, one of the first games of the season. And I don't think they've allowed 1 or 0 runs in any games this year. And almost none of them have been fewer than 4 runs. So you're just not going to consistently win that way. And I know they're not trying to consistently win now, but I'm looking at who's going to be part of the next good rotation for the Milwaukee Brewers. Jimmy Nelson is fine. He has not been awesome by any means. He's fine. He's passable. There's no one else that's pitched a game that I would even consider passable at this point. We don't know. Javier Guerra is kind of interesting. He's 31 years old and a rookie prospect. I mean, maybe he yields something. Zach Davies, I don't think the book has been written on him yet necessarily either. But then you go down to AAA and you see Jorge Lopez getting lit up. You see, there are some pitchers, Chinmen Wong comes to mind, that are doing fine at the lower level minor leagues, but you don't see enough pitchers anywhere that you can safely say, yeah, that guy's going to be a great part of the next great rotation. I mean, Josh Hader is pretty good. But he's a small guy, and a lot of people still think he's going to wind up in the bullpen, although he's been great as a starter this year. He's been a success story. But we're not seeing enough pitchers in this organization, and no matter how good your offense is, they've had teams. I think of that 2012 team after Prince Fielder left where they mashed more home runs than they had with him. You've had teams that are great offensively that just don't have it starting pitching-wise. almost in every case you wind up being mediocre or less.
Well, here's the reason that it really sucks is because for me at the beginning of the season, I said that their starting pitching was the only bright spot. Yeah. I mean, when you really think about it, it's supposed to be Peralta, Nelson, Youngman. I'm missing a major ingredient.
Possibly Davies, possibly.
Yeah, so like it was supposed to be all these guys taking their next steps and becoming the part of the future. Like the rotation was the only part of this team that really that's going to be around in the future, save for Domingo Santana.
Or so we thought.
Yeah, and that is appearing to be in no way the case.
I thought it was a big year for Willie Peralta. I thought he had the tools at 28 years old. Actually, I think he's 26 years old. Had the tools to take a big step forward this year. We haven't really seen it.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing. He still can. You know, like, that's why we suck as media and anybody and just as fans, too.
Oh, how many cases of guys that just blossom a little late after they've left their original franchise? That happens all the time.
Well, and
Jake Arrieta.
No, and I mean just this season. Okay, like, he's had six, well, he's probably had like five of seven bad starts. You know, and he's been really bad when he's been bad. But that doesn't mean that he can't figure this out this year.
It doesn't, but he was really bad last year, too. He was super
So now we have to figure out if last year was the aberration or if 2 years ago was.
Right.
And I don't know the answer.
And the more evidence you get this year, the more you have to think 2 years ago is the aberration, which I certainly don't want to be thinking. Taylor Youngman, I thought it was a little, I don't want to say smoke and mirrors, because he was very impressive when he started his major league career last year. I go back to this a lot. There just weren't the minor league numbers to support that he could be a great pitcher at the major league level. There just wasn't that data that suggested this guy is going to get to the majors and be awesome.
Yeah.
Because he was a 4.5 ERA guy in the minors, at the higher levels of the minors. So I wasn't surprised when it started to slip a little bit and then.
But not slip this far. I mean, this is crazy.
He's unfortunately right now, he's just not a major league pitcher. And to add to this issue, you go down to AAA in Colorado Springs where the air is super thin. And how are pitchers supposed to get anything fixed? Because in thin air, nothing is what it seems. So they don't really have a good training ground to send these guys down unless they send them all the way to AA, which is not off the table, but it's just not the traditional course of action.
Sounds like in a couple years they might be in San Antonio.
Right, well, but not until 2019.
And actually it's where that team might move to San Antonio, but then other teams in Texas are going to try and move to San Antonio, which means it's going to be a revolving
door.
What
that means for the Brewers.
But. I don't know. Bottom line is that this hasn't been as disappointing as I thought it would be. I think there are some bright spots, some different ones than I thought that would be bright spots, but overall, I'm okay. I'm doing okay.
I love watching Chris Carter hit. I know that might end in a strikeout, although way less than I think we thought it would.
Yeah.
I love watching that guy mash the ball. It's like when Russell Branion was here. Yeah, there's a pretty good chance he'll strike out. And there's a chance he sends one into outer space, and I love that. I love having a guy on the team, especially on this team where you know you're not going to win more than you lose. You got to have that guy that you just love to watch. And then Ryan Braun is hitting better than he did when he won the MVP in 2011. Yeah. That's incredible, the bounce back that he's had from this injury that really kind of took over a year out of his career. It really crippled him for a while. Yeah. He seems fully healed.
Yeah, and if he's back, that's best case scenario, because either he's really good for the Brewers or he's really good for somebody else and the Brewers get a bunch of prospects in return.
Yeah,
so.
We came into the season sort of assuming that Ryan Braun would, nobody would take him, right?
Yeah.
Because A, the contract is bad, by the way. The contract is not that bad.
Not at
I'm so
all.
Sick of people talking about how bad that contract is. Look at the other contracts in baseball, buddies. The contract is not that bad.
But is.
Yeah. We thought, well, the injury history, the PED backstory, that's going to make him untradeable. I got to tell you, he's got to be as valuable as anybody at the deadline if the Brewers are motivated to move him.
Absolutely. So I think we're doing okay. So next topic today, something that I think is very, very undercovered, underappreciated, and is really impressive, and that is those Marquette Golden Eagles winning the Big East Lacrosse Championship. And it's not a popular story, but I think it's really impressive.
Did they beat Denver is the number one team in the country, not in the conference, but they beat them to win the Big East, right? 7-6.
Yeah.
On Saturday night, they get to go to the NCAA tournament for the first time.
Get to host it to start.
Yep, they're a sixth seed. They get to host North Carolina, which, I mean, if you think of lacrosse, if you have any semblance of history in watching lacrosse, North Carolina is one of the first five schools that pop to mind as being a lacrosse power.
So, Syracuse, Duke, Virginia, Johns Hopkins.
Yeah, Johns Hopkins. Yeah.
There we go.
So, That's a huge deal for them. Now, I'll say there's a couple reasons why this isn't a bigger story. One is that there are zero kids on this roster from the state of Wisconsin. Yeah. There are 50 kids on the roster. None of them are Wisconsinites. That makes sense because the vast majority of high school lacrosse programs in Wisconsin are fledgling. And if you are good at lacrosse in Wisconsin, this happens a lot, you wind up going to a prep school out east to finish your career to play with more elite competition. That's very typical. So that makes perfect sense. And the other thing is lacrosse just still hasn't caught on here as a sport. It's still growing in the high school ranks. I mean, Carroll University has a team. I want to say Carthage has a team. I might be wrong about that. But there are teams popping up around Wisconsin that are going to supplement the interest at the lower levels. We're not there yet. But certainly having a team win the Big East is going to get interest up because now the recruiting interest in Marquette program is about to go up. It's a pretty good situation.
I just think it's crazy because this is the fifth year that this program has been around and only the fourth season of intercollegiate competition. These kids, and I did a story on I think there are four fifth-year seniors. So there are four kids who showed up with literally nothing to base any of this off of. One of the guys I talked to, he knew Coach Amplo from when he was an assistant at Hofstra, and that's literally all he knew. Did not know where Marquette was, did not know anything about it, but decided that he wanted to play college lacrosse, and let's be honest, that means that he didn't get a lot of other offers.
Right, right.
And that's fine, but he decided that this was where he wanted to spend the next 4 or 5 years of his life. And now, as a reward of sitting out that first year when all they did was practice, I mean, can you just imagine, all practice, no games, stick that out, stick through being just a, to use your word, a fledgling program for 3 years, and now this fourth year being high, they're the sixth best team in the nation, and they won the Big East, they are in the NCAA tournament, they get to host a game. That is amazing.
What a sales job, because a lot of those guys, I think I saw a Michigan kid on there maybe, a lot of those guys are coming from Pennsylvania, Ontario,
all of them
Canada.
Out east in Canada.
How do you sell them on the city of Milwaukee? Other than saying it's an urban setting without like the problems of a real urban setting like Chicago. So you could maybe say that. You could maybe say, well, you're going to go out east a lot to play teams anyway and see your families then. But amazing that you could make that sales job work. Oh, in just one generation of college students have a winning program.
Yeah, and not to mention the support from the university. So like, you're getting recruited, and of course your coach is going to tell you, hey, we're going to have great facilities, they're going to build this, this, and this for us, we're going to have our own field, you know, it's going to be great, just trust us. I'm not buying that if I'm a kid.
Yeah, right.
Like, of course you're going to tell me that. And not only did they actually buy into it, but it came true. So I just think it's an awesome story. That story might end brutally on Saturday.
Sure.
They might have been overseeded. They host North Carolina and they come in and they just annihilate Marquette. And it could be over. But in the meantime, it is a fantastic story.
The second time in history of Marquette athletics program that a team from Marquette has beaten the number one team in the country. The other time was, any ideas?
Was it their tennis team beating Virginia?
Shut up, JP. It was in 2003, Dwayne Wade leading the Marquette team, men's basketball team, to the Final Four. A guy named Dwayne Wade in the Elite Eight, beating Kentucky and reaching the Final Four. That was a big deal at Marquette.
I guess. That's what I hear.
Yeah, so this is cool. It's cool to have another sport to sort of talk about, and I know it'll take a while before lacrosse really gets entrenched in the Wisconsin community, but it definitely has a good foothold now. It's getting a good start. So I went out a little while back to chat with some players from the Arrowhead High School baseball team, the number one team in the state, also a top-ranked team. They were undefeated at the time. They have actually since lost to the Kenosha Tremper team that was on Time Warner Cable Sports Channel.
Hey, I know them.
Sports Weekly last week. Yeah, also a very good team. They lost 7-6. It was very close. Tremper rallied. That was over this past weekend. But the fun thing about Arrowhead is, well, there's several layers to the story. One is they've got some kids on this team that are going to be drafted, most likely, in the June draft, which comes up in the, I think, first or second week of June. In Major League Baseball.
June 9th. Thursday, June 9th.
All right, there it is. So they got a pitcher named Nate Brown, who I talked to. He's very good. An outfielder named Dominic Clemente, who also could be drafted. I talked to him as well. Another pitcher named Ryan Schmidt, a catcher who's only a sophomore, who won't be drafted yet, but Jeff Holtz is his name. All four of those guys are going to Division I universities, major programs. And they have an outstanding, talented outfield. They've got Johnny Duranzo, who led the football team to the state championship game as a quarterback. He's going to go to Oshkosh and play maybe a couple sports. I don't even know. Holtz is already committed to Indiana. Schmidt's going to Illinois. Did I get those backwards? I don't think I did. I think I got that one right.
I'm just going to assume you got them wrong.
Okay, that's fair. Nate Brown's going to Florida, so they had a Michigan recruit last year. I mean, the Arrowhead program is just churning through these Division I kids right now, which normally wouldn't surprise you with Arrowhead High School.
Correct.
However, they are an interesting story in that 2 years ago, they decided to switch from summer baseball to spring baseball.
Correct.
Because these kids weren't playing at Arrowhead. They wanted to do the traveling baseball circuit in the summers, did not want to spend time playing high school ball, so they were just doing club ball the whole time. They moved to spring legitimately because it meant that these kids could play. Last year they were the number one team in the state, I believe lost one game. Shocking sectional final loss to Milwaukee
Ronald Reagan.
Right. Yep, it was a great story. So I did talk about that with the players and Coach Vince Mancuso a little bit. Talked about the draft, talked about switching from summer to spring and kind of what that meant and all sorts of things. And they're just a really interesting story on many levels.
And I actually remember when they made that switch, I went out and did that story on them and Captain Memorial and why they were switching. I ended up talking to a few different schools. And, yeah, I remember Coach Mancuso telling me, like, yeah, we legitimately have 6 or 7 guys that would love to play for us but can't.
Yeah, and not only that, they're all going to D1 colleges if they decide not to sign with Major League Baseball teams. I mean, it's a really good situation.
Yeah.
So I touched on all that stuff. There is a little bit, too, that we'll talk about after this about specialization. That seems to be a hot-button topic in sports. It's kind of a dirty word, actually, in sports now, with a lot of coaches saying that it's just not a good thing. So we'll talk about that a little bit, but here are my interviews. You'll hear them in order. Dominic Clemente, Nate Brown, and Vince Mancuso.
Joined now by Dominic Clemente, outfielder for the Arrowhead baseball team. Dominic, your team is undefeated, one of the best teams in the state, if not the best team in the state. That's kind of old news for people. If I'm writing a scouting report for a team that would play Arrowhead, what am I writing down? I mean, what makes you guys so tough? What makes it, what has been the key to your success? Pitching's the obvious one, but I mean, what are some of the things that make you guys so dangerous?
I think a lot of the things that make us such a difficult team to handle is we have incredible defense, and our lineup is solid throughout the whole thing. I mean, pretty much all around, everything is great. I mean, we have our 1-2 punch with Ryan Schmidt and Nate Brown on the mound, and then we have Jeff Holtz behind the plate, and our outfield is one of the best, if not the best, outfield in the state with Nick Bastine, myself, Jai Duranzo, Tyler Jones, and our lineup is, I mean, we're just, we hit the ball very well, we play small ball very well, and on the base paths we can run. So, I mean, everything all around is very solid.
It is crazy to have 4 quality outfielders like you guys have, better than quality, a lot of kids that are going to play in college in the names you just mentioned, you yourself going to Michigan. As outfielders, I mean, do you guys try to one-up each other? Because I don't know, if, like you said, any other team that has what you guys have, do you guys pride yourself on being great defensive players or just the fact that you guys can all hit the ball? I mean, how do you sort of compete with your fellow outfielders? Is there anything that you guys do?
I mean, we all just, during practice, we all break off into our positions. So, I mean, outfielders usually go and hit. And, I mean, it's always just kind of a battle between us 4, really.
Yeah.
Just for the sake of us getting better every day. And we push each other all the time. And we got a really good thing going here.
So, you going to Michigan, you are not even close to the only person on this roster going Division I or going to play baseball on some level. I know you haven't been able to compare that to anything, but it's pretty heady stuff when you look at the number of college kids on this roster. I mean, is that sort of comforting, knowing that everybody's kind of going through this process, that you're able to sort of share stories about the recruiting trail and making your decision? Did that help you make your decision? I know you have a former teammate, Jack Bredesen, who's at Michigan. Did that play into it at all? And just, I guess, what's it like being on a team with a bunch of kids that are going to play on the next level? I mean, that's crazy.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely humbling, for sure. It's cool to be in the same environment as a lot of guys who are going through the same process, and it's nice because we all have that same kind of mentality, and there's a certain camaraderie that comes along with being on a baseball team and being, I mean, even for the guys who aren't going to play college baseball, mm-hmm. I mean, we all stick by each other no matter where we're going to school and whatever, because we're a team, we're a family.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's definitely humbling, and it does make it a little bit easier to play with a lot of those guys just because we've played at such a high level our whole lives and we can bring that to high school baseball.
the club season plays a big role for a lot of baseball players. What is your schedule like? How does the club season work together with the high school season? I mean, are you playing before the season and after? How does the schedule play out for you?
You know, generally with the spring season, the way it is, we play into the summer, and that overlaps with our summer teams.
Okay.
So, for example, last year I played with Styx Academy under Coach Sean Smith, and we didn't make it very far in the playoffs, unfortunately, but right. We overlapped a couple tournaments, so Nate Brown and I, and along with the other kids who do play club for other teams, such as GRB or Styx kids or Hitters kids or whoever it may be,
right.
We still overlap tournaments and stuff, so we can't go play for our club teams until after a high school season is over.
Right. Okay, you mentioned the loss in the sectional final. Huge upset, really, when Arrowhead lost to Milwaukee Ronald Reagan. You ran into a pretty good pitcher that day. As you look back on that, I mean, was that just a fluke? I mean, how do you sort of explain that? Is there any way... You guys only lost, I believe, one game, maybe two, going into the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
So is there anything more you could have done? Because I just wonder if that's the way baseball is. Sometimes you run into a guy and the bats just aren't going. How do you look back on that?
Well, right. I mean, you said it. I mean, that's just baseball. You run into one guy and that could screw up your entire thing you have going. I mean, the pitcher we ran into, his name's Alec Marsh. He's going to Arizona State.
Mm-hmm.
I played with him last fall for the Cincinnati Reds scout team.
Oh, wow.
And he's a phenomenal pitcher. I mean, really, he's dominant on the mound. He's a great competitor, and I mean, that's just baseball. I mean, some days you have it, some days you don't, and I mean, it's a game of failure. So I mean, we just came to play, and he just shut us down. I mean, playing it outright, he shut us down.
I don't know if baseball's the type of game where that can motivate somebody to do something different the following year. Has that affected you guys this year? You're undefeated so far. Has that game festered at all and led to something new, something different?
I mean, it's definitely for the returning guys. It's definitely in the back of our heads. I mean, we came into this year saying that will never happen again, because, I mean, that feeling was, you'll never forget that feeling, really. I mean,
right.
Just kind of the feeling of defeat and disappointment. And we came in this season with a chip on our shoulder, and, you know, we're going to continue to have that chip on our shoulder and trying to make it as far as we can, trying to make a run at it.
You talked about that Cincinnati scout team. How does that work a little bit? And is there, I haven't looked ahead, but is there a chance in June you could be thinking about draft prospects? I mean, how does that play into everything?
The way the process works with the Cincinnati Reds scout team, who I played for, it was mm-hmm. coached by a Midwest region scout. His name is Andy Stack for the Cincinnati Reds.
Okay.
So basically he puts together a team every fall. We play a couple tournaments in Iowa, Illinois, and then we go down and play at the World Wood Bat Association, hosted by Perfect Game in Jupiter,
yeah, okay.
Florida.
Perfect Game's a big name.
One of the biggest tournaments of the year, really.
Definitely, yeah.
And he brings a bunch of guys there, and he brings a couple other scouts from different organizations who coach us, and we go there and we just play. It's a lot of fun. And then as far as the draft, you know, me and Nate Brown and a little bit of Ryan Schmidt, we've had some interest coming from Major League Scouts.
Sure,
and,
sure.
I mean, some games you see in the stands, there are scouts here looking at us. And, you know, don't really know what's going to happen come this June. I mean, June 9th, 10th, 11th are big days for us three. And so, I mean, we'll definitely have a decision to make.
Why Michigan? I mean, obviously, like I said, your teammate. But were there other factors? What factors led you to Ann Arbor?
I committed to Michigan my sophomore year.
Oh, wow. Okay. Really
so early. I was committed way before Jack did. But
yeah,
when,
okay. So maybe you brought Jack there somehow.
Who knows? But, I mean, Michigan, when I went there, I'd taken a lot of visits. And when I got to Michigan, it was just kind of a sense of home, really.
Mm-hmm.
The family atmosphere there, I mean, the tradition and the history that they have there, I mean, for me, that it just seems unmatched.
Mm-hmm.
And the coaching staff with head coach Eric Bakich, Nick Schnabel, Aaron Etchison, Sean Kenny, and Wayne Welton. I mean, the coaching staff is unbelievable. I mean, Coach Bakich is one of the top recruiters in the nation,
mm-hmm.
without question. And he's really done a great job with the program. And hopefully going to bring them a national championship here in a couple of years.
Yeah. For people who don't know how college baseball works, because with Wisconsin not having a team, I don't know how many college baseball fans we have in the state, but What is it similar to football that you sort of sit out for a couple of years before you really get your turn? Are there a lot of true freshmen that'll play or true sophomores that'll play?
It's baseball. College baseball is a little different in the sense of football where you sit out for a couple of years. I mean, they do redshirt sometimes, mm-hmm. but, for example, at Michigan they don't redshirt very often. Generally when you go in there at top schools in the SEC or ACC, it is a little more common for you to sit out for a year or two, mm-hmm. but for the other conferences like Big Ten, Missouri Valley, it is a little bit more common for true freshmen to come in and make an impact right away.
All right, Dominic, hope to see you at Fox City Stadium here at the end of the year.
All right, thank you very much.
Joined now by Nate Brown, a pitcher and also an outfielder, right? Okay, for the Arrowhead baseball team. Just talked to Dominic Clemente. You guys are undefeated. This is the best team in the state now for 2 years in a row, pretty much. I kind of got him to talk about the outfield and why that's so good. What about the pitching staff? I don't know how it's possible to have this many good arms, because there's you, there's Ryan Schmidt, who's going to Indiana. Help me out before I start forgetting people.
Derek Crawley, he's a junior. He was on varsity as a freshman, and switched to spring last year. He was on JV, but still... He was one of the guys that we brought up late to help us out. Andy Miller came in strong in the Verona series, start of the game.
So you've got kind of a wealth of talent, and I think it's actually Jeff Holtz, the catcher, who's going to Indiana, Schmidt going to Illinois.
Yep, Illinois.
Okay, so that wealth of talent, I mean, I guess if I were scouting the pitching staff, what would I have to know? I mean, what pitches do you guys throw? What makes you so tough?
Yeah, we all like to get ahead with our fastball right away. I know with me and Rye, we like to establish that fastball right away in, like, the first couple innings. And if we find out a team's on it, then we have trust in our secondary pitches to go to. Mm-hmm. We both throw fastball. Then he throws, like, a curve, like a slurve almost. Mm-hmm. I throw curveball, slider, changeup. That I rely on those every game, that if I know one's off, I can always go to the other one. Where every game he's got those two working.
Okay.
And they're both filthy.
Yeah.
So... me, it's more of just feeling out the pitches before the game, seeing which one I like. And then, yeah, all of our bullpen guys, they all go fastball, curveball, changeup.
Excellent. I just got finished reading a book by Jeff Passan called The Arm, which looks at arm injuries in baseball, especially among elite-level kids. You know, kids like you who'd be pitching it in high school but in showcases and for scouts and stuff like that. How do you take care of yourself? What's sort of your rest regimen, and what are some things you do to sort of keep your arm in good shape?
Yeah, I mean, in fall and winter, I like to try to take some time off, usually about a month, like 8 weeks almost, and just no throwing at all, just like lifting out and strengthening the arm.
Okay.
So when the season comes around, I'm ready to go, and I won't have to worry about that. Mm-hmm. But during the season, I like to make sure I'm flexible still in my arm, mainly in the elbow and the shoulder.
Right.
But with that flexibility, there can be some loose spots that we want to strengthen.
Mm-hmm.
So we look at it as going forward, since I also play a position, that now since we're like in the midway part, we're going to make sure my arm's stable throughout the rest of the season. As last year, I faced like a little back muscle that bothered me a little bit. So if I'm pitching, if we have a doubleheader, I won't play. I'll just DH in the second game. Or if it's like a day in between, I'll probably play some first in there just to limit the throwing.
I talked a little bit about... college prospects with Dominic, and you're going to Florida. How did that come about? When did Florida get involved, and sort of what drew you down to Gainesville?
Yeah, I first got in contact with Florida. I was at a showcase. It was called the PBR Future Games.
Okay.
It was down in Indiana, and that was all the uncommitted sophomores at the time. Mm-hmm. Were all gathered, and I was part of Team Wisconsin. So I got to represent them. There were a bunch of colleges there that were scouting the talent, because we were all uncommitted, so
right.
We were kind of like the future of college baseball.
Sure, yeah.
So we got a ton of scouts down there. Florida happened to be there, Coach Old Sullivan.
Okay.
And he saw me. He liked what he saw. He sent me a questionnaire. And I'm a Midwest guy, so I was like, well,
right.
Florida.
The South, it's a little nicer there.
Yeah. So I was like, I got to take full opportunity of that. Got in contact, called him a few times, kept the conversations going over the phone. Went out to Gainesville on a visit, got to sit down with O'Sullivan, and just the chemistry there, it grew and grew, and I just realized that's where I wanted to be.
Awesome. The Major League Baseball draft will come around in June. Maybe, I know there have been some scouts sort of interested in some of the players you included on this team.
how do you think about that? I mean, how much do you allow yourself to think about that?
I mean, I'd be lying if I said it, if I didn't think about it, sure. Because in the back of my mind, it's like, okay, well, here we go again. But also, as a kid, my dream was always to play professional baseball.
Sure.
So for them coming from pro teams, that's just a blessing to even be a part of. But I try not to let it get to me on my playing field. I'll let, like, off the field, let myself take care of that.
Sure.
And I also have great parents and coaches.
Yeah.
My travel coach was a fifth-round draft pick out of Oconomowoc High School.
Oh, Sean okay. Smith. Yeah, absolutely. Right.
So he's been a great mentor, to help me guide just it all along.
So Sean Smith, big with Styx Academy, of course, mm-hmm. founder, leader of Styx Academy. That was a place where you were when you were freshman. Now, then Arrowhead made kind of the unusual move of switching to spring baseball a couple years ago, which allowed players like you, guys who were in that circuit, to play with the spring team. Catholic Memorial did the same thing, as I think most people know by now. But would you? I'm guessing you would have stayed with the Styx if Arrowhead had stayed at summer baseball. Mm-hmm. Is that? I mean, was it exciting to be able to play with the high school team? It sort of changed your destiny a little bit. I mean, how did that change? How involved were you with the change, or aware of it when it was happening?
Yeah, I accepted the change, and I was glad that they made the change because growing up, I played with all these guys.
Yeah, no doubt.
And all that. And just walking through the hallways my freshman, sophomore year, along with Dom, who opted out, Ryan Schmidt, who opted out, mm-hmm. we all knew, even the guys that were playing high school, we all knew that we had more talent than what we displayed.
Right.
And it was just soon enough that it would be all complete again. The reason why I decided to play travel ball and would if there was still in summer is because summer, you get 50 teams in the league.
Yeah.
Or spring, it's all the state, pretty much.
Yeah, absolutely.
Up north and everything. So, and with my summer team, there's more travel, better exposure, better talent around the country. So I felt that as a player at the young age, in order to get seen by colleges, I'd have to play travel baseball.
Yeah. So last year, kind of one of the bigger upsets, really, I think, in state history, state baseball history, was you guys fall into Ronald Reagan in the sectional final. How often do you think about that game? Because I was talking to Dominic. It's hard. Baseball is a game where any given day something like that can happen if you run into the right pitcher. I mean, is it fuel for what's happening now? Is it just something you kind of had to come to terms with over time? How do you look at that game?
Yeah, me personally, I try just forget it. Life goes on. It's a brand new year. But we do use it as some motivation. Mm-hmm. Like, we had a great team last year that we were expecting to make a run, and so did a lot of people surrounding us. But this year I feel like we're stronger, we're better, but we're not going to look in the past. We're just going to look forward and hopefully get a better outcome.
What's it going to be like if you wind up on that hill at Fox City Stadium at the end of the year?
That's what I dreamed about growing up,
sure.
Playing through all the – I played with Myrn Mavericks.
Yep.
So, and my brother was older, so he played Arrowhead. Mm-hmm. So just always dreaming about playing for a state title. It's what it's about. That's why we're out here.
All right. Hope to see you there. Good luck. My guest is Vince Mancuso, head coach for the Arrowhead baseball team. Vince, you got the best team in the state. You got guys left and right going to Division I colleges. I'm sure there's plenty of guys going to lower level colleges too. How does that happen? Like, did the stars just align for this program? How do you get this much talent on this team? It's got to be pretty heady stuff for you guys and for your coaching staff.
Yeah, we looked at it a couple years back when we were in the summer baseball program, and that was one of the reasons we decided to make the switch over to spring is because we knew the talent that would be coming through over the last couple of years and this year as well. So that was one of the motivators behind it. We do have quite a few talented kids. At the same time, these guys are really doing a nice job playing together, challenging each other, and competing not only in practice against each other, but then obviously these guys compete in everything that they do.
If you're trying to build the perfect team, but I mean, you know that you can only really emphasize certain areas. You've got this incredible outfield, this incredible pitching staff. I'm guessing pitching is where it begins. You got to have a really good pitching staff, especially in the state tournament setting where you need multiple guys. Is this the best pitching staff you've been a part of this year and last year, where you've had this sort of this alignment where all these kids are coming in with great arms?
Correct, yeah. The last couple of years we've had some very, very good pitching. You know, you asked that question, where would you start? There's a reason, you know, Kershaw makes $1 million
to
start.
Yeah, no doubt.
You know, those guys, that's still the premium. So if you can pitch and get guys out, That's usually where a lot of the focus is going to be, not only in the free agent market, at the professional level, at the college level, but also at the high school level, because at our level, you can throw a guy a Tuesday and a Friday if you choose to do so, mm-hmm. Because of the innings bounce back. But, you know, next year they're looking at pitch counts, which I think will save a lot of our guys, and some of the people that don't put a focus on pitch counts now that are throwing guys, you know, 200, 250 right. pitches a week. That should bring that to their attention as well.
Yeah, I was telling Nate, I just read this book by Jeff Passan called The Arm, which mm-hmm. looks at that issue, just pitch counts, the ulnar collateral ligaments that have snapped over time for young kids, older people, Major League Baseball players. Do you have any sort of regimen to keep these guys healthy? I mean, that might not fall on you, but are there things you do to preserve their arms?
We monitor their pitches. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we monitor their pitches. The highest we've ever went was with Jack Bredesen last year against Oconomowoc, 9 innings. I think he was at 118 pitches.
Okay, yeah.
And I told myself that that's the limit because the game is important, but, you know, these guys are going to be going on to the next level.
Right.
And the integrity of the game, winning is important, but at the same time, we value the student athlete and their health. And that's why we try to cap it probably, you know, depending on who it is, about 100 yeah. pitches tops. A lot of these guys are going to their all year round to begin with.
Right, right.
So they come in pretty good shape. So it's just kind of tweaking and building as we go along through the season.
At the beginning, you talked about that move Arrowhead made a couple of years ago. Catholic mm-hmm. Memorial did too, to go from summer to spring. And that was largely because you had talented kids that weren't going to be playing for Arrowhead. They were playing all throughout the summer season anyway. What was that process like for you? Was it unusual to have a situation where the situation on the club level was somewhat informing what happened on the high school level? I mean, at the same time, summer baseball's kind of dying over the course of the last several years, so maybe it's a move to make now anyway. I mean, how did you look at that process?
We did what was best for our institution, mm-hmm. And when we looked at all the facts and weighed all the options, it was better for our school and our community to move into the spring.
Yeah.
That way we could keep, you know, all these guys together. I know Tim looked at the same thing at CMH, and, you know, those guys were losing quite a few guys to travel
right.
ball. And they're going to be contending for a Division II deep season, postseason run too.
No doubt.
So I think each institution, it's, you know, they got to look at what's good for their school and community and their program, and that's what first off what we looked at.
You think summer ball does have a shelf life? And they've been saying that for decades now. I mean, I think 2 decades.
Yeah, I mean it's been around. I think that debate has been around
right.
since I was in
like
high
1990.
School.
Yeah.
So you know it's still around. They do a nice job down at Concordia there for the state tournament.
Absolutely.
You know, and I know the Classic Eight and the Metro and all those teams. I mean, that's a pretty competitive conference as well,
yeah.
and a pretty competitive league. This was just a better move for our institution out here.
So what makes your team so tough this year? You talked at the very beginning how they push each other and everything, but I guess if I look up and down your lineup, do you have any holes at all? Is there any way that I'm going to be able to get you out as an opposing?
We do have holes. I'm not going to disclose it to you right
yeah,
now.
No doubt.
But, you know, we do have some holes, and these guys, every day they come out here, they want to get better. They strive to get better because you had alluded to it last year. You know, it doesn't matter what you have on paper. Mm-hmm. You have to go out and produce against top-notch kids like Alec Marsh because we found out pitching and rankings and your offensive stats really don't matter when a guy's throwing 92 and striking out
Absolutely.
12 to 14, whatever it was.
Right. Some of these kids are, like we've talked about, play a lot with travel circuits. They play a lot of baseball. Some probably play just baseball. Specialization is something that has come up, I think been vilified the last few years, where a lot of coaches feel that you need to be competitive year-round, you need to play multiple sports, avoid burnout, that sort of thing. Is there, though, a type of kid that really specialization is the right thing for them? Say they are really good at throwing a baseball. I mean, are there circumstances where it just really is the right thing to do to sort of bore straight ahead with the one sport?
We push, obviously, multiple sports
right.
here, especially at our school, because we do have a lot of great athletes.
Right.
You know, to your point there, I guess if you're going to make some money at it someday and
yeah.
you can provide for your family, then you might want to look at specializing.
Sure.
But until then, play as many as you can while you can, because the higher up you go, they'll tell you you cannot do anything anymore, and then you will solely be doing the sport that you love to do.
Right.
And hopefully you can play that as long as you're able to, and eventually everybody's got to hang it up, and then you can play the rec leagues. But, you know, if you look at the draft this last year, I think I saw a stat, what was it, 28 out of the 31 were multi-sport athletes.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, that's still the message that is being preached here. And I think a lot of high school coaches are still preaching the multi-sport because,
yeah, definitely.
You know, it's for the well-being of the athlete as long as, and as well as the whole athlete, themselves, you know.
So you got a lot of guys that are going D1. The June draft is going to roll around, and they might hear their name. Are you going to be nervous when the June draft rolls around? Have you given that any thought, or is it just too in the distant future right now?
You know, we take it a day at a time, pitch at a time.
Sure.
But you know, in the back of the, you know, it's exciting. You know, Wisconsin has never been
a hotbed.
Yeah, it hasn't. And you know, the other day we had the number one catcher in the country out here, mm-hmm. and it was fun to see how excited these guys got.
Yeah,
seeing, you know, 15 scouts and a couple of checkers here. Yeah, I'll pay attention to it. I'm sure as we get a little closer, we'll probably all get together because we do have a realistic shot of having a couple guys picked up.
And, yep.
You know, that doesn't happen every day, so we're just like everything else, and enjoying the journey and the process together, and hopefully we'll end it up at Fox City. We'll see
what
happens.
Definitely, yep. Hopefully I'll be there to watch you at Fox City Stadium. Well, thanks a lot, Vin.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for coming out and hanging out with us.
All right, JP, I didn't get into this too much with the interviews, but I did talk to Vince a little bit about sort of his view on specialization and whether or not it's valuable to have kids play multiple sports. And he said what I think a lot of people feel. If you can feed your family with a certain sport, certain skill set, it might be time to focus on just that skill and hone it and be prepared to go to college with it, etc. That's a very small percentage of high school athletes. Otherwise, you should be doing multiple things. I read an article in the New York Times that sort of painted a picture statistically saying, yeah, kids who focus on one sport, one set of muscles, are more likely to get hurt than kids that don't. It's just specialization also leads to a lot of burnout when you're focused on one sport year-round. Do you have any thoughts on specialization? Because I have a couple pet peeves when it comes to this topic. In general, I think most people are sort of on the same page that, yeah, specialization, by and large, is not a good idea.
Well, I think that Coach was right in that, you know, yes, if it's something that you could do very well in and you could, feed your family, then yeah, it kind of does make sense to start thinking about it. I think, first of all, with Arrowhead moving to spring, I mean, that almost forced a little bit of specialization in that it used to be, just by basic math, it used to be a summer sport, so somebody could play four sports if they wanted to. They could do track and field in the spring, baseball in the summer.
There were a lot of kids that did that. Chris Pendergast was an elite pole vaulter and baseball player.
And so now, just by moving to spring, you are actually forcing a little bit of specialization in that you have to choose from those three seasons. So I think that you're right that it has become a little bit of a dirty word because it means, I think it carries a different connotation than it actually means. Like the connotation is that you're taking 7-year-olds and you're tying their right arm behind their back and,
yes,
and making them a left-handed pitcher.
I totally agree with that.
And that's not the realization. A lot of the times, especially in the high school ranks and high school age kids, it's literally just taking them and making them play their favorite sport a lot. Like I've obviously talked about it a lot. My favorite sport was hockey. I wasn't really good enough to, quote, be specialized in it, but yet that was all I wanted to do, you know?
Right.
I mean, I'm sure if you ask these kids, I'm sure there's the 5% of it's literally their parents dragging them places to make them earn a scholarship.
Yes.
Because they think they're the next great star, and that's just not the case. But I'm sure a lot of them want to be doing this, and they have friends that, you know, baseball, you have somebody who plays for Arrowhead, but then they go play their travel teams, and they have friends from other schools that they get to play with, and those are good times. Like, some of my best friends growing up from hockey ended up going to Catholic Memorial and to Waukesha and Brookfield.
Right.
So, you know, there's so much more to it than forcing a 6-year-old to play baseball when he doesn't want to.
Yeah, I very much agree with that, and I think that is something that is discounted highly in this argument. It's assumed that the parents are driving the bus, and it's fair because that does happen a lot. It isn't even just about college scholarships, although that certainly comes into play big time. It is the fact that parents spend a lot of money at the youth level. Okay,
yeah.
we started in hockey at age 7. Kid liked hockey. We put money into all the equipment. That is an expensive sport to play.
Yeah.
We go to all these different tournaments around the area. We lose our weekends. We dedicate everything to hockey. Well, now age 13 rolls around. Yeah, I don't really want to do hockey anymore. What do you mean you don't want to do hockey anymore? I just invested all of this time and money into hockey.
Yeah.
I think it's very difficult for anyone to let go at that point, to say, okay, go with what the kids' interests are, because on the other side of that, kids do impulsive things all the time. They make decisions that aren't in their best long-term interest. How, as a parent, do you weigh that? It's very difficult. And that leads to conflicts with coaches because you want playing time as a reward for all of this investment. And yes, maybe the college thing comes into play too. Plenty of people that are willing to come and tell you, yeah, your kid has a chance at college, come to my camp and, you know, spend some money with me and we'll see what happens. So The one pet peeve, though, I do have about specialization, and it rolls around every time about this year around the NFL draft. You get people saying, look at that NFL player. Just got drafted, but he was a wrestler, so that's super great. He played multiple sports. I just read a thing where Ohio State offered a kid because they saw him at a track meet. And Ohio State got a lot of kudos this last year because their kids were all multiple sport athletes in mm-hmm. high school or something. Well, yeah, they were. They were. Because in football, there's no AAU equivalent. There's no club ball. There's no playing in the middle of summer. You play football during your high school season. There's nothing else. So unless they're lifting weights all year, and granted, there's probably a tiny percentage that is, mm-hmm. most kids are going to get bored out of their minds with that. They're going to play all kinds of sports besides that. It's not football. I appreciate that they are on one side of the issue that I happen to agree with. I don't appreciate it. They're just not the wrong ambassador to spread that message. It's basketball, it's baseball, it's softball, it's soccer, it's all volleyball. It's all these sports where there can be a club equivalent that you might have a problem.
Yeah, and I think maybe there's a little argument of correlation and not causation.
Exactly.
That just
yep.
because they happen to play basketball and did track and field doesn't mean that did absolutely anything to help them with their football career. So
agreed.
I understand and I get it, and I think that it's good to have kids just with diverse interests and diverse friends and different circles of competition. That doesn't mean it was responsible for it.
Here's my other pet peeve.
Go.
The everybody gets a trophy concept has taken on a life of its own. That is also a dirty phrase. There's just this massive movement away from any sort of award system that doesn't acknowledge greatness. Basically, the idea that every kid gets a trophy just for participating is garbage. They should say, who are the winners? Who are the losers? Reward hard work and success and great athleticism and talent, etc. These two concepts can't coexist. Because if you're going to say the everybody gets a trophy thing is a problem, then don't you also have to say, well, then maybe the key to being better than the guy next to you is to specialize. The key is not necessarily to spread yourself out and play a bunch of sports. I mean, there's so many benefits to that. But I get irritated that there's so much clamoring on both sides of that, which I consider to be diametrically opposed viewpoints. Do you believe in a world where everybody gets acknowledged for what they do, or do you believe in a world where kids should not specialize in one event and play multiple things? Because I have trouble seeing how these two things can exist together.
Well, the everybody gets a trophy thing, it's become ridiculous on both sides of it, where the actual culture of everybody getting a trophy and kids getting participation medals has gotten to a ridiculous point, but also the voices against that of, you know, what, for instance, us talking about the WIAA and like five divisions of basketball. I'm sure at some point on this podcast, I've used the phrase, oh, you know, everybody gets a trophy. We're going to go to six and seven divisions now for basketball, and that's not necessary. So like even that movement of insulting the everybody gets a trophy philosophy has become ridiculous in its own right.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I think there's one of those feared words or feared phrases called a gray area in this that nobody likes to admit.
I agree. Very hard to capture, too. I'm a parent of a kid who I don't think is going to be a blessed athlete by any stretch of the imagination. And unfortunately, he's also very competitive. And I understand this when another athletic director told me this several years ago. It really hits home now. Seeing your kids fail is one of the hardest things in the world. So you don't want to see them upset because they didn't get a trophy or a ribbon or some stupid thing. I mean, we went to a dance recital, and I didn't buy him flowers. I didn't think to do that.
Wow.
All the other kids got flowers, and he threw a tantrum. And I felt terrible, even though I know he's not going to care in 20 minutes.
It's like Mother's Day all over again.
Don't get me started. So it's seriously, I understand that that is a very natural reaction, that you want what's best for your kid. You want your kid to taste success, but at the same time, you also want your kid to feel appreciated. So it's very challenging, and I can see why parents later in life would be like, no, you must stick with baseball because you're good at that, and I want to see you succeed because we put money into it, and it's good to see you succeed. It's just a very difficult thing, and like a lot of things with parenting, there is just no way to know.
Well, I think now the lesson that you've learned from this is that you now have a very successful business plan. You need to sell flowers outside of dance recitals.
You're absolutely right.
And Broadway shows and all that
stuff. Oh my gosh, that would capture an entire market of dads who have no idea what they're doing.
I'm telling you, you just got a business plan. You're welcome.
So what else is going on Time Warner Cable Sports Channel this weekend?
Oh, who knows? We're supposed to have the Milwaukee baseball team playing against, I want to say, Illinois State tomorrow, but spring weather being what it may, not sure if that's going to work out. A cool thing that we started this spring is our, so we've done our Timeless series in the past of just, you know, like the Marquette game to get to the Final Four, Wisconsin in the Final Four.
UWM against Alabama.
Wisconsin hockey winning the national title. Like, right. Really old games, or not really old, but, you know, games of the past that we have the rights to that we then rebroadcast. What we started this year is high school timeless.
I saw that.
And so we've just taken some of the best games with some of, like, the best players. Like, we took a game between Diamond Stone and Henry Ellenson. Broadcasting that one. The one that's premiering this week is between West Appear and Seymour. So that's Cody Schwartz, Chandler Diekvoss, and Sandy Cohen.
A lot of the guys that we see in college games right now.
Yeah, so that's cool. So that's premiering Tuesday night. And we're going to have those, I believe, the whole summer. We have a ton of them. Football and basketball, too.
That's awesome.
Homestead beating Menasha, or Menasha beating Homestead.
Right.
Other Homestead game. Yeah, so there are a lot of good games that are coming up.
Awesome. At LakeCountryNow.com, you can find my article on Molly Seidel, who...
Legendary
Molly Seidel. She's pointing towards the Olympics. She's got 4 national titles at Notre Dame in her pocket. She went to University Lake School, won 12 state titles while she was here in cross-country and track. Distance runner extraordinaire. The Olympic trials are right around the corner in early July. So she'll be looking at that. I also, speaking of the Olympics, did a story you can find on WaukeshaNow.com on Gwen Jorgensen. She is from Waukesha South, elite, top-level triathlete, competed in the Olympics in London. She got a flat tire and finished in the 30s, but is most people's pick to win the gold medal. I mean, she is at that level. She's exceptional. Talked a little bit about her, where she's at with her training, and then did sort of a series of things in threes with Gwen Jorgensen in the vein of the triathlon. Three great places to eat in Waukesha, since she said eating is a big part of her training regimen, and also 3 pieces of advice, things of that nature.
Without a doubt, one of the hardest working men in your cubicle, by far.
Yes, I surely am.
Good
am.
For you. Well, there you go.
You continue to backhand compliment me all over the place.
There you go. Lake Country Publications, now newspapers. Well done, sir.
Yeah,
proud of you.
You're welcome, JP. And to you as well at Time Warner Cable Sports Channel.
Love it. All right. That is it for Initial Reaction. Thanks for listening. Bye, friends.